tiger tongue.
Good afternoon, everybody. So it came to Latona's attention, and he let me know that there were some mistakes on the schedule. Can you believe that? And so I apologize if there was some extra stress in the body about, you know, the kinhin and around the Dharma talks and being able to get to the bathroom or not. So we have a pretty, it seems sort of simple when it's all rolling, but it's a pretty complicated little gig, the 3-day Zen retreat with 36 people in one room. And then we add Oryoki practice. So there are a lot of possibilities for making a mistake. So I wonder if anyone here made any mistakes today. How was that? How was making a mistake? Maybe the tricky form of Zen, and this is like the simple version, you know, maybe the tricky form of Zen is to help us to study making mistakes and eating the blame. So I apologize for the schedule mistakes. They were my fault. And I really appreciate Latona and Flo, who are quick on their feet and flexible, helping us out. So Norman's given some lovely, very cheerful talks, didn't you think? This retreat about the wonderful potential for training the mind. And we find out he's a new grandpa, so of course he's cheerful. And I've been curious actually for a while about the Lojong teaching, so I was excited to get to hear about these teachings and be reminded that the mind can be trained. Isn't that great news? You know, they never told us that till now. We didn't know that the mind could be trained and opened to the beautiful, empty nature of reality, to the endless potential of our living. But as he mentioned, we can only get there honestly. We can only open to some broader understanding of ourself and our living through effort and honesty by touching the actual ground of our condition. It seems like it doesn't work out too well to just have great new ideas. We've all had a lot of great new ideas. But it seems like we need some new ideas in contact with the ground of our living, with a deeply felt understanding of our actual condition now. Not what we wish was happening, and not even what we think is happening. But through our practice to touch what is actually happening beyond our wishing and thinking. And isn't Zazen great for that? Isn't Zazen great for that? Even over the course of an intense but a short retreat, maybe you've noticed that the mind wishes things were some other way. Pretty often. And within the container of Sesshin, where we can't busy ourselves, well, we can still busy ourselves pretty well. We do pretty well, but within the container of Sesshin, we can't distract and busy ourselves too much, and so reality returns, and we feel the results of our habitual thinking and our habitual attitudes and our stories. So just before this talk, I came in a little bit late, but that was justified and okay. I was with my family, And in fact, you're really lucky I'm here as much as I am. Did you know that? This is the first Bellingham retreat which I have attended every sitting period in 7 years. Did you know that? You know, like a sesshin. The short ones I can do, but since my son was born and my wife got sick. And so it was really good that I was here late. But then, a little bit later than me, Connie came in. And I thought, well, why is she late? And I noticed that I was instantly suffering, you know? It's nothing to do with Connie. Sorry, Connie, wherever you are. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the mind.
Please stop her from sneaking out.
She's really here. It's beautiful, actually. It's really beautiful. So my original assignment for this talk was I thought I would give a little talk on the precepts, the Zen precepts, which actually would be extra apropos since we're going to give... Lee will receive the precepts tonight, we found out. In late breaking news, the Eno's department is sending me memos about this.
Nothing to worry about, don't worry.
Good. It'll be wonderful. So my original assignment was to give a short talk about the precepts, and because Nancy and I worked together with six or eight people, and we had a 5-week class on the precepts during the practice period. That was our practice period commitment. And it was really wonderful to get together like that with some time to talk and think and contemplate, to consider our lives together with some real honesty, you know, some real intimacy. People were very honest and very clear. And, you know, the precepts, the Zen ethical guidelines, start out, they sound like rules at first. But as we study them, we realize they're actually just us. They're just life. They're just understanding what is this life. They're signposts or magnifying lenses or crowbars or something for helping us explore our own life. And so I thought I would write a nice little sort of overview talk about the class. But it doesn't seem to be what's up for me, so sorry, I'm not going to do that. Because the class was great, but what I noticed, well, it took me a while to notice, I didn't even notice at all at first, but I noticed I was having some difficulty in class. A sort of strong but subtle feeling of something not being quite right. And I was having trouble putting my finger on what the problem was. And my general storyline lately about what my problem is that my schedule is too much. I'm doing too much. I'm squeezed by my day job and my family and my Sangha life and then actually like trying to take care of myself somewhere and my child and all this. And so I have lately a strong storyline that I'm too busy. And the mind yo-yos about sometimes. It's telling me that actually it's fine. It's very full and intense, but I'm so lucky, you know, I have so many blessings, and it's true, it's unbelievable. If I list off my situation, it sounds like the dream life, you know. If I list it off, I have a well-paid job I can do from home, I have a wonderful family, wonderful Sangha to practice with, living in Bellingham, Washington, a place, you know, many people give their eye teeth to live here, you know. And so I often have the story that, well, it's intense, but it's okay. But other times the story arises strongly, this is not fine. It's too much. I'm squeezed. I'm stressed out. I need more time. And lately it seems to be like various solutions involving quitting my job. That's often there. And so, but anyway, having this busyness and this sort of story about busyness, both at once, I didn't have very much time to prepare for class. And so I thought, well, maybe that's my problem in class, why I felt a little bit off, a little bit sort of out of phase or something, like I wasn't fully participating or fully there. And, you know, luckily Nancy did wonderful preparation, and so we had really nice classes. I was prepared enough, I think. And maybe because I wasn't over-prepared, as I often am, I was more able to listen and create space, which is maybe a better and more important job to do anyway. So anyway, most of the classes we would start out with some reflective writing. As we would finish our lunches, we'd meet kind of at lunchtime and then have class. And we wrote about different things. And then Nancy would give a really lovely organized report on two or three sources, like kind of nicely woven together, you know, and a little bit about her life, and it was really quite elegant. And I would say one or two things. But mostly we just listened. Mostly we just listened to the people in the class. So, and that seemed very valuable, and people thanked us, and you know, when people thank you and say it was great, you don't completely believe them, but I think they were sincere. I think it was a good class. I don't think there's anything wrong. So I don't think my disquiet in precept class was about that. I don't think it was about my lack of preparation or about being too busy. Somehow it was more that as wonderful as our discussions were about the precepts, our discussions about how to apply the precepts without overdoing it, how to be more mindful, how to respond to others in some very difficult situations people brought up, how to live life with a little more gentleness, a little more humility, a little more honesty, a little more balance. That as wonderful as these discussions are, there's something in the middle that we didn't quite talk about. And it was no fault of any of ours. I think there's something in the middle that we usually don't talk about. I think this is normal, not surprising. Nothing wrong with me, Nancy, nothing wrong with Nancy, she did a great job. And what I was realizing is one of the wonderful treasures of Dharma practice is that we start to feel in our bones there's some potential here in human life. There's really potential here for something much deeper, for really deeply touching the ground of our being beyond all these complicated details and stories and arrangements and strategies that we were talking about in class, beyond anything that we can even really think about our life. There's something deeper, and we start to really feel that. Beyond our anger at our brother's bad behavior, beyond our worries about our failing bodies, beyond all of our many issues about control or self-esteem or desire or love or whatever it is, there's something more. We can feel that. There's something solid, something dependable, somehow below and just on the outside edge of our peripheral vision that we can almost see. And I think our Dharma practice teaches us little by little that the root to this deep, ultimate sense of the solid ground of our being is not just through sort of convincing ourselves of a better story. It's not just through being sweet and nice, I'm sorry to say. At least it's not for me. We need to be nice, but there's something more. It seems to be through honest experience, hard work, and suffering. Through radically and honestly feeling how we really are, feeling our real feelings to the core, in our bones. And sometimes, in the course of practice, there are wonderful, joyous experiences. Things open and drop away. That happens sometimes. But more often, period by period, moment by moment, there is suffering. There is difficulty. There is challenge to turn towards. And inevitably, we're strongly encouraged by suffering and pain to open up, to readjust to the actual reality of the situation beyond our stories and beyond our narrow views, and to reconnect with what's beyond all that. Because in our practiced life, we have no choice, really. And when somehow the stars are aligned and we have support and love and patience, and we are able to turn towards our actual experience, even when there's pain, even when it's hard, it's somehow okay. Just okay. Somehow we can feel that everything just is And it's complete. And it's enough. And to rest in that feeling is the most beautiful thing. And it's a beauty that does not exclude pain. It includes pain, it includes truffle, it includes tears. And it's the beauty of the full scope of our crazy, wonderful human life. But we forget. So often we short-circuit this process of really attending to our actual lived experience and entering into something deeper. We short-circuit that by sort of papering things over, by avoiding things, by creating blame and stories and issues, and avoiding our actual feeling. When we don't really let ourselves feel the depth of our human life, then there's suffering without that feeling of the redemption of the of our true life. And it doesn't help us either when we participate too strongly in the sort of social lie of, I'm fine. Because this me person is not fine. That is not the nature of me. And sometimes the depth of human experience comes back to us. Sometimes we can reconnect with our potential through the human imagination in the form of art. Sometimes art really helps wake us up, remind us that there's pain, but we don't have to suffer in that way. We don't have to only be me. Poetry, music, and the arts somehow can really express something. Something important. It's so easy to forget. And we forget that we've even forgotten. That's the trick of it. Much of the time going around about our business, we don't remember that we've forgotten, right? So it's a trouble world for us. But the arts really help us. Good teachings are, in a way, nothing but art. So when I was trying to sort of sort out my feelings around our precepts class, I was listening to some music, I think at my desk, when I was working. And so I want to play you a song that somehow reminded me, not of how wonderful it is, but of the beauty in really understanding and feeling when we're trapped, when we're caught. So it's a song by Bruce Cockburn called Pacing the Cage. Pacing the Cage, that's the refrain he sings. And please just listen. I'll read, the lyrics are pretty clear and the lyrics are important, but don't worry too much. I'll read the lyrics afterwards if you couldn't make them out. Let's see if my gadget works.
Many times. strips worn thin. And each time I was someone else, and everyone was taken in. Powers chatter in high places, stir up eddies in the dust of rage. Set me to pacing the cage. I never knew what you all wanted, so I gave you everything. All that I could pillage, all the spells that I could sing. It's as if the thing were written in the constitution of the age. Wind up facing the cage. Sometimes the best map will not guide you. You can't see what's round the bend. Sometimes the road leads through dark places. Sometimes the darkness is your friend. Today these eyes scan bleached out land for the coming of the outbound stage. Facing the cage. Facing the cage.
What I was appreciating about that song was not just the deep acknowledgement of our dark feelings, our desperate feelings, but also a feeling of the dignity and the beauty that arise whenever we really allow ourselves to feel, regardless of what the conditions are. Because in denial of our actual feeling, awakening is suppressed. And in opening to reality, awakening finds a foothold. And the potential of awareness is so beautiful. And in that bright awareness, we find in a whole, we are fine in a different way. We weren't really fine in the way we thought we were, but we're fine in a different way than we thought. Maybe we're fine in our not fineness. And I think we need a lot of support and maturity, which we can't exactly get. Just comes. and patience. Spiritual practice like Zazen helps us so much. But I'm feeling like feeling our suffering through to the end is when we really can start practicing the precepts or practicing anything. As we really accept and understand the bars that we've surrounded ourselves with, when we feel that and understand that, we create a beautiful possibility. Possibility of awakening is there. Crouched in our cage, surrounded by our fears and our judgments and our righteousness, we can see another possibility. But so many things bind us. I'm sorry this is not a cheerful talk, but I think it's important. We have to study the bars. We have to understand what are our chains. We can't skip over this. There are no shortcuts. We have to study the dark in our hearts. We must find our way in and through. And Sangha life is a great way to study these things. But Sangha life is just a version of regular life. Life provides all the teachings that we need. And when we realize, when we notice that we're pacing the cage again, we have an opportunity to study the cage. What is this experience of our conditioned human life, really? Are the bars of our cage conditioned? Are they mental formations? Are they opinions? What are they? Some are obvious to us. Some are more mysterious. But what I am noticing is, like all formed and conditioned things, they are not permanent. Sometimes I feel trapped in this life lately, but actually I'm always fine. The real fine. Just this moment, breathing in this body, engaging in the activity before me, because I can only really be doing one thing anyway, regardless of what my story is. And then sometimes the bars are not even there. They come and go. And it is our habit of mind to think that once we notice these bars, they are permanent and impenetrable and probably were always there, we just didn't notice. But that does not seem to be the case. Practice really helps us. Art helps us. Sunsets help us. Taking care of the body helps us. Studying the precepts helps us to enter the reality of our situation and awaken from there. Where else could we awaken from? So since this song was helpful to me, I thought let's study this teaching from Bruce Cockburn for a minute. Sunset is an angel weeping, holding out a bloody sword. No matter how I squint, I cannot make out what it's pointing towards. So I've been so happy this retreat to have Manjushri and Avalokiteshvara Guanyin on the altar along with Buddha. So thank you to Laurel and Christopher for bringing Manjushri. Compassion and wisdom holding up the Buddha, making the Buddha possible. And Buddha, in the middle, making compassion and wisdom real and embodied out in the world where it can do good. And look later at Manjushri. He's got a, that's kind of a funny thing in the end, but he's got a sword. And he uses it when he has to. Sometimes we need strong medicine from life, and Manjushri is there to cut away our craziness and wake us up. And his sword definitely gets bloody. Because life is bloody. It is messy. We want it to be tidy, but it isn't. And we feel the pain of Manjushri's sword, but we can't quite see where he's pointing. We want our pain to come along with a little rule book, or at least some instructions, but sometimes there's just pain waking us up. We need to find the direction. The pain of the sword is teaching us. Then he's saying, sometimes you feel like you've lived too long. Days drip slowly on the page. You catch yourself pacing the cage. Our usual approach, as we know, is not really sustainable. And once in a while, it all catches up with us. We are stuck in the mud, and it feels so heavy. A couple of days ago, the air itself felt so thick to me. You ever feel that way? The air just feels thick. As we touch our body and breath practice, we notice sooner when we're trapped. We notice when we're pacing the cage, and sometimes we notice how we got there. And in that awareness, there is potential. A seed of awakening is sprouting. I was remembering reading a Chogyam Trungpa book a long time ago, where he talks a whole lot, there's a whole Dharma talks and Dharma talks about mental manure. You remember this from teachings from Chogyam Trungpa? And we don't like our mental manure too much, but that's what's fertile. That's where we awaken from. Then he's saying, I've proven who I am so many times. The magnetic stripes worn thin. And each time I was someone else, and everyone was taken in. Our identity is our burden, isn't it? We try over and over again to prove to our many critics who we are and that we have value. This me is a good me. Please believe it. And of course, who is our harshest critic to whom we're trying to prove all this to? Ourself. It wears us out. But as we study the mind in Zazen, we see how silly, how repetitive this is, how boring. And we learn little by little not to give it so much energy. Because when we really do this, we are fooled, and others are fooled. They think that that is who we are. And they are taken in. And so are we. So isn't it time we stopped doing that? Then he's saying, powers chatter in high places, stir up eddies in the dust of rage, sets me to pacing the cage. And this makes me think of the Lojong on making all blame one. Because we blame so much. We're not skillful in our blaming. We blame society. We blame our government. In a way, we're kind of in big trouble now that many of us love the president. You know? We blame our parents. We find ourselves in the middle of an impossible situation. And there's nothing left to do but thrash around in our cage in reaction to rage at the world. But what if we learn to turn that blame and work with it in a way that really helps us and all beings? So I think it's important for us to study that teaching on eating the blame and making all blame one. And then he's saying, I never knew what you all wanted, so I gave you everything. Sounds like how I operate in the Sangha sometimes. And all, I gave you all that I could pillage, all the spells that I could sing. Our suffering expresses so strongly in relationships. We want so badly to give our beloved what she wants, what he wants. But from our limited perspective, as a suffering being, we don't really know how to ask what he or she really wants. So we assume, we project, we decide. We give ourselves away with many strings and magical expectations for what will happen. Can we give ourselves away in a healthy way? Can we give fully with no thought of giving, without any pillage, without any magic spells, just giving? Then he's saying, it's as if the thing were written in the constitution of the age. Sooner or later, you wind up pacing the cage. From our conditioned view, it feels inevitable. There's no escape. Suffering and non-connection feels sometimes like it's written into the very fabric of the universe, like it's written into the constitution of the age. Can we feel how deeply we believe this? Can we understand that habit of mind so that there can be possibility of waking up from that nightmare dream? I was remembering that spiritual practice, you know, we are so sort of mechanic. I think, you know, it's our sort of post-Lockean, you know, post-industrial age. You know, we're so mechanical. We think spiritual practice is like tools and machines that will lead to a result. But I think it's a much more massively creative act than that. Can we fully imagine that we are Buddha? And somehow that seeps into our bones. And we understand that we were Buddha all along. Then he sang, last stanza, I'll quote, sometimes the best map will not guide you. You can't see what's round the bend. Sometimes the road leads through dark places. Sometimes the darkness is your friend. This feels a little bit like Sesshin. We don't know where we're going. Even when we have the best teachings and wonderful teachers, we can't access the teachings in the dark, we think. And maybe it's a perfectly good map, only we can't read it. It's like the letters that made sense yesterday are today just meaningless symbols. We really touch bottom and we enter the darkness. And if we can let ourselves really feel the darkness, we may find out that it is our friend. This makes me think, there's, you know, often hear Dharma teachings that riff off of Dante, you know, abandon all hope, ye who enter here. Because I was thinking, we can't really feel the warmth and support of darkness if we're still craning our necks looking for the light. Can we feel what is and let that be? Just let that be. So please, let's allow ourselves the support of this practice, these last day or half day of Sesshin and the practice in our life to come. Please, let's actually study our actual life experience. Not be reaching for some other life we think we should have. Not confusing ourselves with some other version of what's happening. Let's investigate this life we are actually living, this life we were given. And if we do, we will see that sometimes we are pacing the cage. It doesn't do any good to pretend that that is not the case. But the wonderful opportunity of really feeling the cage and knowing when we're in the cage is then we know two really important things that maybe we didn't notice before so much. The two things are, we see and feel the bars that bind us, and we see in between the bars. We may not understand them really, but we can feel them. And we can see into the distance the fields of Buddha, which stretch on endlessly in all directions. And there's such potential there. When we see we're in the cage, it means that we can imagine not being in the cage, which we couldn't have done before. And this is very powerful and very important. Pretending we're not in the cage is not the same as this. And so we study the bars. Naturally, we start out by like shaking them, you know, whacking them with things, because that's what we do, pushing at them. And if they don't give, we might spend a long time rearranging the cage to make it a little more comfortable. Doing our best to forget we're in the cage. But once we've seen what's in between those bars, we won't ever forget, really. We can be distracted for a while, but we won't really forget. And so we study, we ask for help, we imagine, we dream, we enter the dream time, and we find ourselves slipping through the bars like mist, like a phantom. And when we awake back inside, we see we have choices here. We can believe in the solidity of these bars and live our life hemmed in by this cage of our own making, or we can deeply accept the situation and work with it. And when we work with it, suddenly we find ourselves outside the cage. Were we ever really inside the cage? Maybe the bars aren't solid after all. We just thought they were. Maybe we are actually free to come and go. Maybe we have that feeling. Oh. You know, that feeling. Maybe I'm not just me. You aren't just you. And we merge and enter into Buddha's love. Touch the mind ground of Buddha's fields. And then we're all together, out of our cages. It's so wonderful. So let's practice with this, if you want to. Excuse me for such a long and downer talk, but it seems to be what is up for me. And many of you have reported recently that you are not pacing the cage at all right now, and that is fine. Many people have told me and told the Sangha that they're very happy and content, and that's wonderful. I'm not trying to get you in the cage. I'm just trying to encourage you to really look. Fooling yourself has not worked. It has not worked. Please feel more deeply. Below any idea of happy or depressed or tired or whatever it is, opening to the boundless possibilities of this human life to see what we can see. And one thing I remember I told our precepts class that did come from this, so maybe I did okay. One thing that came up for me once was, it seems like there's two things that we can count on in life and practice. The first is that it is actually possible. It is actually possible to feel what we're feeling. And the second is, there is more that we haven't felt yet. Our hearts run deeper than we know. And our practice exploration of this is the project of many lifetimes. And what else is there that's really satisfying to do? So please help me with this. And I'll help you too as best I can. Sunset is an angel weeping, holding out a bloody sword. No matter how I squint, I cannot make out what it's pointing toward. Sometimes you feel like you've lived too long. Days drip slowly on the page. You catch yourself pacing the cage. I've proven who I am so many times. The magnetic stripes worn thin. And each time I was someone else. And everyone was taken in. Powers shatter in high places, stir up eddies in the dust of rage. Set me to pacing the cage. I never knew what you all wanted, so I gave you everything. All that I could pillage, all the spells that I could sing. It's as if the thing were written in the constitution of the age. Sooner or later, you wind up pacing the cage. Sometimes the best map will not guide you. You can't see what's round the bend. Sometimes the road leads through dark places. Sometimes the darkness is your friend. Today these eyes scan bleached out land for the coming of the outbound stage. Pacing the cage. Facing the cage. Thank you very much for listening. Please take care.